Please pull up a seat and wind down. Was your sojourn on Rakenjima a pleasant one? The Golden Witch has invited you to a tea party. We hope you choose to attend.
Party.
Hi.
My name is Courtney. I am the witch of video games. And these are my guests.
That was extremely creepy.
You're welcome.
Jump scared for our wrap-up episode.
Yeah. I just, you know, since this is about a horror book, I wanted to make sure that I included the horror element.
Oh yeah,
the horror element
that the game mentioned occasionally, remembered about occasionally.
Yeah, I will say, I think Higurashi did the horror element better. Yeah. Sorry,
The true horror was finishing Umineko.
Yes, horror was finishing along the way.
Yeah. Hi, my name's Rowan. My pronouns are he, they. I was late to the podcast today because I was getting my car washed. I've never done that before. Like, I've already always hand washed my car, but my car was so dirty that the guy the car washed was like impressed with how dirty it was. So I was not going to get that out by hand. It was really quite That's an upsetting fair. Experience. So I come to you slightly disconcerted and smelling of watermelon air freshener.
That's beautiful.
Hot.
My name's Jess, my pronouns are they, them, and to sum up my life this morning, I went to the shop to get coffee and lunch, and I didn't bring my ID, so I wasn't allowed to buy paracetamol, because I don't apparently look 16, and I am twice that.
Good
so,
Who needs Botox?
I'm like, yeah, exactly. I'm a teen now.
Yeah.
Assigned teenager at Saints.
Yeah, you're apparently like 15 at most.
Oh,
so
perfect
good job.
Age for George.
Oh.
Ah!
Brilliant.
I'm glad that we never came around to not liking George. That's one of my proudest achievements.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like opinions have shifted on a lot of characters in this, but they never shifted on George.
Nah, we once a nonce, always a nonce.
Yeah, they shifted. They've gone from a sliding scale of like slight, very slightly more sympathy in some areas, a lot less in others, depending on what he's up to. But they don't shift from
I can see that.
From the initial, you're dating Shannon.
Even before we knew, like, had fully grasped the age gap, we were still like, wow, you know?
I'm like, that's a servant employed by your family. And I'm like, oh, and she's 7 years younger than you. Oh, never mind. Get in the bin.
Yeah. Also, just, I'm very sorry. Shannon's personality is such a, like, blank slate. I wouldn't feel comfortable dating her because I feel like she can't say no to anything just on a personal level. And
I have thoughts on Shannon, but that's
well,
what wrap-up episode's
this
for.
Is the episode you can share them.
You can share thoughts.
You have
all heard so much of me and Rowan's shitty opinions throughout this whole thing. Now
mine.
It's Courtney time.
It's Courtney time.
So we are doing a wrap-up episode today, so spoilers for all of Umineko, but if you're listening to this, you're probably aware of everything in Umineko.
Or you don't care.
Which
is valid of you.
Listen to us, give our final thoughts, having read the whole thing over a year and a bit.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to start this by asking you guys a question. Would you like to know what is in the Book of Single Truth?
Sure.
We're that's a thing that's possible.
Did someone else write it?
Ryukishi has actually revealed what was in the Book of Secrets.
Oh yeah, go on then. Hit me. I can't tell whether I'm going to hate it or not. Or love it. Okay. Yeah. Please tell us.
As per usual, the family all went to the family conference. They argued about gold, and the mysterious letter showed up asking to solve the epitaph. So the adults all decide to put their brains together and pretty easily solve the epitaph and find the gold. Inside is a very despondent witch who presents them with four guns on a table and tells them about a clock device that can blow everything up.
Mm-hmm.
The adults start arguing, and in the scuffle nuts, he gets shot. Following that, Rudolph and Kyrie turn on everyone and start killing them.
So very similar so far to the one that we saw.
Following this, Ava actually survived and goes to try and warn everyone, but not before Rudolph and Kyrie kill basically everyone except Battler, who they lure out to try and convince him to escape the explosion with them. Ava kills Rudolph and Kyrie, stopping their murderous rampage, and Battler goes down into the submarine base, where he finds that even though Kyrie had attempted to shoot Beatrice, she actually was still alive. Ava sets up the island to explode and goes and hides in Kuadorian. Meanwhile, Battler and Beatrice escape. However, only Battler makes it to the mainland.
Yeah, so a very slightly altered version of... I can't even remember who showed us this now. The Rudolph Kyrie murder theory.
Yeah. Episode 7, Tea Party, shown by Burn Castle and Lambda Delta.
It's a version in which Ava is slightly more culpable in killing and setting stuff up, but like, you could have guessed that she might have done that anyway, because we didn't get shown the ending of that.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that Anja was so surprised at seeing that, considering she... did she witness
she that had
episode
already,
7?
Yeah,
yeah, that's pretty much what we saw.
She was shown this as, like, her worst possible outcome.
Yeah.
And then it was
pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think maybe she was hoping that she would still get a version where her parents weren't murderers, but you know.
Yeah.
I'm kind of disappointed, because I feel what I really hoped the Book of Single Truth was like something completely whack that we hadn't seen before.
I wanted it to be new.
Yeah, this is too close to like something we've seen. I'm like, oh. Sure.
I wouldn't have minded if it was a Rudolph Kyrie murder, but I would have enjoyed it if it was different, like, to what we'd seen. And for that reason, I'm kind of glad that they didn't spend ages talking about it in the game and showing us it in the game.
Yeah. If we'd been shown that in game and had to sit through like this exact same sequence of events
might have been interesting is if they didn't show us the original one, but they did show us that as the single truth when Anja saw it. Because that might have had a lot of impact at the time, and I think that might have been quite cool. Because, like, the point of the game is not that... The point of the game is about, like, you don't need to know the truth, but Anja found it out. So I feel like we should have too, maybe.
Yeah.
If she opened the book, then
gets to see it?
Yeah, like... Especially if you already knew what was in it and it was the same thing we'd already seen. Like, you know, you had it there. Mm. You didn't have to think of anything else. Just show it.
Yeah, even if you were going to, like, wimp out of showing it us, you could have Anja be like, damn, it's so similar to the thing that Burncastle showed us. I don't know. Actually, I think that sucks. I take that back.
Yeah, I think they should have just cut the first time we saw it and put that there. And given us the full insight into that scene there. And then because we did at that point, we wouldn't have had any foreshadowing to be like, oh, it's a Rudolph Kyrie murder thing. That would have been a big shock.
Yeah, that was the version we had to, like, work out, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a Rudolf Kirie, or, well, it was a Rudolf Kirie Baffler culprit theory.
Yeah, that one was different.
Is that different again? Have we had two of these?
Yeah, that's... We've had two Rudolf Kiries. One was the Burncastle game that we solved in video format. Go check it out. and then one was the episode 7 tea party, which...
Where they solved the epitaph and it was all fine, but then they started killing each other anyway.
Yeah, because...
They got the good ending and then ruined it.
Yeah, I remember that. That's quite funny that the canon version is that they got the good ending and then ruined it.
Because I think that would have been really interesting to see, as knowing that it's the single truth, being like, wait, but they've solved it and they've got the good ending. How is this go so wrong?
Yeah, that's fun. That is fun. That could have been a really cool, like, accumulation at the end. Ryukishi, you had something so good.
And you just, I think he just put it in the wrong place.
Yeah.
So we found this out in the manga, similar to how we found out a lot of extra material in the manga. So that's where this was confirmed.
Yeah, I've gotten over Umineko is a visual novel with supplemental reading. Like, I'm not mad about that anymore.
Yeah, no, I think what I will, generally say about Umineko is that it has some really good ideas, it has some really good scenes. I think he really struggled with structuring the whole thing and putting it together into a narrative that is satisfying and flows properly.
Specifically, like, he couldn't deliver at the end, and I think, like, just, like, having... Yeah, I know he had a team, but, like, having somebody really sit down and help him edit this.
I think as well, like, I don't know, you don't have to see it this way, but, like, you could read into this quite a lot, knowing that he had someone close to him die in episode 6. I think you could read this as kind of a sad story of, like, the end starts to really break down a little bit. Like, he doesn't seem to really know where he's going, and it's just lots of emotions flung everywhere. And I don't know whether it was just him being, like, sitting in his feelings of grief and, like, trying to, like, process them through the characters and story he was already writing in a way that didn't necessarily mesh with what he'd already done.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting take. I don't like the ending of Umineko.
Yeah.
I think the only issue I have with that reading is I do feel like he was kind of going down this path in episode 5.
He didn't go completely off the rails, I will say that. But I wonder how different it would have been if that hadn't happened.
I do feel like it had always been intended to be a very different feeling story in the second half. But I do feel like maybe some of the themes were brought to the forefront because of real life events.
No, I agree with you. I think it is set up so the second half will be very different. I just, you know, I wish he'd kind of made the ending a bit more coherent than it actually is.
Yeah, I felt like with the ending there were lots of good bits. They just weren't necessarily connecting for me, and
I've got all the puzzle pieces.
And you know, the thing with Ryukishi where he spends a lot of time trying to make it very clear about certain things and spends a lot of words on certain things, and then, like, just never wants to tell you exactly what's going on the bits that really matter. And like, that's difficult because when you're so used to being told other stuff quite explicitly, the fact that when it comes to right to the really important bits, it's kind of skimmed over. You're like, hang on, what's happening?
I
will say I personally enjoy works where I don't feel where the author doesn't, like, spell out the themes.
I wouldn't have minded so much if I hadn't felt like I was being hammered over the head with them in other sections.
I think
it's the difference.
I feel like
between...
what he does is he, again, one of the downsides of reading this so segmented is I think the way you're supposed to read it probably quite close together. So if you hit over the head with themes early on, and so when he sets up later stuff in the ending, it's like, oh, I've been prepped for this because I've been hit with the themes so early on in the work.
I don't know that I agree with you, considering, like, he released it episodically. If you're going to release
No, as in, like, I mean per episode, because we have all the stuff with the Ange, like, Halloween party. And I remember you guys at the time being like, okay, I get it, I get the themes, can we, like, move on, please? And then when we got to the actual ending that the Halloween party, like, sets up, you guys got a bit confused about what the themes were going for?
Well, it was more that, like, if Anja herself had responded to the themes during the Halloween party and she seemed like she was, like, doubting herself as to whether her family had actually been like that, I'd have been with it. But she spent the entire Halloween party rejecting that, being like, no, this wasn't what it was like. So that complete 180 really took me by surprise and didn't seem true, because with weirdly little prompting, she went from like 20 minutes of being like, no, despite what you're showing me, this isn't true, to actually, no, I agree with you.
Well, now you know what was the prompting.
What, the single truth?
The single truth, now that you know the single truth.
I'm not sure that would have helped me personally. I'd have been like, yeah, you're right, my family were dickheads, they all killed each other. But yes.
Again, I think it comes down to the fact that I'm just like, well, I could hang on to the fact that my family were dickheads and all sucked, or I could just kind of pretend that they weren't and, like, move on with my life.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thought, isn't it? Like, I didn't consider this at the time, but it is possible that it's another magic witch truth thing, and Anja is actually like, yeah, no, like, Anja knows deep down that her family were complete shitheads, but she's choosing to believe that she had a good time with them, and that they were nice. Which is not something I'd considered, because that sounds kind of bad. But, you know, go you, Anja, if you want to do that.
But again, I think, like, the big difference is the fact that they're dead. I feel like if this was, like, an alive, abusive family, then obviously, like,
that does change things somewhat.
Remembering that they're abusive is like, oh, yeah, sure, I need to stay away from these people. But because these people are dead, it's like, whatever. What are they going to do to her?
Abuse in the past is still hurtful in the present, but...
Yeah, but it's not like she can, I think holding on to all the negative experiences that she had would keep her sort of stuck in the past. That's what it's kind of saying, is it's like a way for her to move on.
This is really interesting to me. This is now, I think, the third or fourth time we're, like, back on that golden truth question, because we had pretty much the exact same discussion, like, a few episodes ago when we were talking about Anja's approach to Ava and whether, like, her forgiving Ava. And I think we've also probably gone really far into this in when we were talking about Maria and the neglect stuff and the escapism. And this is fascinating to me that this is, like, the core thing that Umineko is bringing out of us. I don't know. I'm observing that. I'm not making sort of...
It is, I think, the ultimate theme it's trying to get at is that, like, about, like, what does truth mean? What is the value in truth?
And yeah, it's truth just interesting. Like, absolute. It's just interesting to me that this is the specific, like, incarnation of that question that keeps coming up.
Mm. Yeah.
Because
I mean, it was always gonna be. This is a story about breaking the chain of abuse. That is the theme throughout all of Umineko has been consistent on, is like breaking out of this cycle.
I mean, this is a pessimistic take, but the chain of abuse is broken because most of the people who could have perpetuated it are dead.
Yeah. Something tells me Anja isn't really parent material.
Well, she runs an orphanage.
She funds an orphanage. I'm not sure she runs it.
We were like, oh, no, it's fine. There's just one Yusuromiya to fuck people up, and she, like, runs an orphanage and has access to thousands of children.
She funds an orphanage, and it's made a place of fun, apart from the fact that she recreated the Yusuromiya dining room, which I hope is a witch truth, because that's really fucked up if we actually did that.
A place that we don't know if she's actually ever visited.
Well, we know she went there when she was like younger than six.
Yeah, like I don't know whether she'd remember what it really looked like.
So again, like, because she's decided to like just focus on the positive parts of her growing up, like visiting Rock and Jima, I can understand that she'd like maybe have more positive feelings towards
the main hall or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
The main hall. So I can kind of understand it from that perspective.
I'm obsessed with the idea of like baby Ange with an SLR taking pictures of the dining hall because she needs like some record of what it looked like so she can like perfectly commission architects later on in life.
Again, I don't think it's probably a perfect recreation, but it's like close enough. It's got the portrait.
Portrait. That's like the big, which is wild.
I mean, to be fair, if you're like a 5-year-old and you're in a big room with a giant portrait of a white woman in Japan, you're probably gonna remember the giant portrait of the white woman.
Those children in that orphanage are gonna either think that that room is the coolest thing ever, or they're gonna think it's absolutely terrifying. And I don't feel like there's any in between.
That's what Bayo is
like. There's the cursed white woman portrait, or being like, "Oh, the witch Beatrice is my best friend."
That's exactly what Bayo wants.
Yeah,
that is exactly how Beata kind of played out, because she was both used as like this legend to keep kids from going off into the forest, but also was like Maria's best friend. So
I do like it. I do like the living on of like the portrait in the sense that it kind of carries Sayo's story through a little bit. Yeah. Like it's like a kind of memory of them. Which I do. I still think the ending I wanted more of. I wanted more Sayo closure, even though, you know, Sayo kind of died. But, you know.
Yeah. I mean, Sayo was probably always going to die, sadly.
Yeah, and that was the point.
Yeah, because the whole point was the game being like, I don't want to live anymore.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to go out, I might as well take all these people with me.
Yeah.
Sad game. It is a sad game.
Yeah.
Like, I think that is ultimately, like, it's not supposed to, like, it has a sort of, like, uplifting message, but ultimately the game is very sad.
Yeah.
I've decided that for my witch truth is that Maria lived on and got therapy and became a children's book author as well. Because I think she'd do fucking great at it.
Yes.
Yeah, she'd be incredible. Such a good author. Yeah. Now, the Rosa stuff is a bit rough. I do appreciate... Okay, so coming from Higurashi's angle of child abuse, I do appreciate it being a bit more, like, nuanced. However, I don't think, obviously, that excuses Rosa's action.
What does that mean?
The Higurashi child abusers are so cartoonish.
Okay.
It's they're basically like the Skeletor of child abuse. It's like, this guy's an alcoholic, and he invites all his awful friends over, and he like makes his adoptive daughter go and do all the shopping.
Yeah.
Etc.
Which, you know, some people are like.
And like
that,
he's so obviously evil. It's like, yeah, I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but I do think from when you're telling a story, you can do something a bit more interesting.
I do appreciate the fact that like Ryukishi has spent a lot of time making his abusive characters like, you know, tell jokes, have their own trauma, have like humanity, and like
because I think it helps like break down the fact that kind of anyone can be abusive, and it's not like, again, literal cartoon monsters who are abusive. It's like
just because you like this person doesn't mean that they aren't capable of these things.
And similarly, just because of the abusers are hurting as well, and this is a way for them to like excise that hurt, doesn't mean that what they're doing is okay. Because I think all the parents did bad things to their children on varying scales. I think Rose's is the easiest one to hone in on because it's the most explicit, because she's literally hitting her child.
Yeah. But there's also then a lot of neglect and words, verbal abuse as well, that you see when there's the deep dive.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of more subtle stuff that obviously like Natsui and Jessica, like you get a lot of hints between like Ava and George and presumably, and then complicity as well in Hideyoshi condoning Rose's treatment of Maria. Hideyoshi presumably going along with what his wife does.
All of them don't really stop it, but George is the one to explicitly say to the children, like, oh, this is their business. Don't worry about it.
Child sedative.
The child sedatives.
The child sedatives. Which I still don't know if that was a normal thing. Yeah. I tried to find out, but we never found out.
I'm
going to
go with
child sedatives.
Probably not. I've decided.
I don't know if this is like an early form of like a child ADHD medication, or
whether it's just like, we had some Valium and we're giving them small doses of Valium, like, you know, like.
Well, apparently whatever was in there was like, I assume they used a lot of it, but like Ava stole it in episode 3 to knock out Krauser Natsuhi so that she could strangle them. So.
Yeah, I mean, like, if they're child sedatives, like, but you can use enough of it to knock out two grown adults. Like, you've either got a lot of it or it's actually fairly strong if you use enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do think one of the main themes is about like kind of the rich kind of like closing rank to protect each other over like the people who are clearly being hurt by them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're like in every murder scenario, they're so quick to turn on the servants.
Yeah,
like immediately.
And the servants, despite that, continue serving them in all of those scenarios as well. Even when it's like, even though it's made clear that like Genji wasn't like raised as a servant, he was raised as a rich kid, and he's adopted this kind of servant persona thing. And that kind of sense of loyalty and duty or whatever has just like clouded all of his judgment over like his own self-preservation, which is wild.
Yeah.
One thing I will say is at least the fuck is consistent, because if this guy was like, okay, Kinzo, I will follow you to the ends of the earth, I'm gonna like do all these horrible things to this child, and then the minute it's like, oh, Genji, we're gonna kill you, he was like, oh fuck it, I'm dropping the facade. You know, at least he's got him. He's a man of integrity, despicable though he is.
Yeah, he doesn't put his own life above those of the other people that he's helped ruin. I suppose is a point in his favor.
I do always wonder if Genji's actions throughout the novel are motivated by guilt. Obviously,
he seems
no
like his entire life has been like in service to Kinzo because of like this sense of debt, and that the more he does for him, the more he feels he has to do to make up for the other things that they've done together. He's just digging a pit.
Which is why I think like there's something quite poetic about him always dying, and usually in a lot of the scenarios it's after committing a bunch of murders he then is killed or kills himself. I think it is quite good that he's the only one who actually is in on it but is doing killings. I think that really fits with his character.
I wanted more insight into Kumasawa, actually.
Because it's a shame that a few of the other characters, there are a few characters in this who don't really get very much, and sadly she's one of them.
Yeah, because like she's a queen, first of all.
She is a queen.
Like,
again, she's complicit, but she is a queen.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I want more insight is because she's so heavily complicit in all of those things, despite the fact that, unlike Genji, she isn't this model servant. Like, she's a bit cheeky. Like, she gets away with a bit more. Like, there's this implication that she kind of, like, lets other people do things and then makes excuses, although it's hard to tell in the narrative if by excuses it actually means legitimate medical concerns. Hard to separate the two because we don't get her actual perspective. But like the fact that there's that going on, like there's some hint that she might be a more rebellious character, and yet she also doesn't do anything against this family or helps or anything. Like I wanted more exploration of that. Like, it could be that, you know, she was providing for children, we know she had kids or whatever, but like I wanted to know like if there was anything
the implication is meant to be similar to Nanjo. She sort of closed ranks because of the money,
Yeah.
Because Nanjo, we have a lot of hints about his sick grandchild. It's not really gone into.
Yeah.
But that's the reason why he has to work for Kinzo and this family, is because he just really needs the money and he's willing to do all this horrible stuff for it.
Which is so again,
because
funny.
We know Kumasawa.
If I was in Kumasawa's position, I would set up a bank account somewhere that is basically once a week, for example, I go to this thing and I send someone a text to say that I'm okay. And I say, okay, this is set so that if I do not send this text every single week, this gets published with all of this evidence of this fucked up shit you've been doing.
Yeah.
Because you've been letting me wander around here alone and take pictures and I've got like fucking recordings or whatever. And then I'd be like, okay, give me enough money to live my life on and to like keep my sick son. I'm never working for you again. That's what I would fucking do.
However, I do foresee a scenario in this in which Kumasawa does, because that's blackmailing Kinzo, essentially. In which Kinzo's where Genji just kills her and they cover it up.
Well, that's the reason why I wouldn't be surprised if like offshore bank account one week text message thing, because the threat is it doesn't matter what
she can't
do
text anyone, it's the 80s.
Damn.
It's the 80s.
Being in the 80s has foiled my plan.
We need a carrier pigeon or something in his stat. Use those crying seagulls.
Yeah. No, I think with Kumasawa, I think the way I kind of see her story is obviously she's got this large family that she's trying to, like, provide for, but clearly her health is in such condition that she, like, kind of can't work anywhere else at this point. That she's kind of kept this job so long because she's, like, a loyal and trusted servant. Mm. And that kind of nowhere else will have her. That's kind of the vibes I always got.
Yeah, I think they're not necessarily bad vibes. I would have liked that explored a bit more. I think she's an interesting character. That she could have had, like, that could have been hinted at in a few more lines that could have been taken away from the yen value of gold conversation and we would have lost nothing.
That's true. That's true. I also think, obviously, Vigilia is an aspect of her character in a similar way that Ranove is of Genji, is sort of like Sayo's perspective on her is sort of shown to us through Vigilia and Ranove.
You've just reminded me that we never really got an actual answer for what Gap was an analogue of.
Gap is the old form of Beatrice, that's what she is.
Yeah.
Similar to what we're shown in episode 7.
There's so many Beatrices, it's so confusing.
So Vigilia, despite being an old form of Beatrice, is Kumasawa, but okay. Gap isn't.
So Gap is the one that Sayo came up with first. And then Vigilia is an old form of Beatrice in the fact that, like, Sayo decided that she needed, like, a mentor figure.
And based it off Kumasawa, because Kumasawa talks to her about magic and stuff.
Yeah, and was like, how would this fit into my lore? Oh, I know, she used to be the, like, Beatrice, and now she isn't.
I do think another point for Ryukishi here is that he should have thought of some other names, and not everyone should have been Beatrice. I will, like, you can... you can add the sense of like this person inherited this status and title without also inheriting the name. There are too many Beatrices in this game.
I like it being like a name title, but like
I like it, but there are too many of them to keep track of.
Usually they're given some sort of qualifier because you get like Ava Beatrice, Ange Beatrice,
Proto Beatrice.
Except for that time that we get like Chick Beatrice, the other Beatrice,
Elder Beatrice. Prime. Yeah, it's
fucking hell.
Mega Beatrice.
Okay, that's probably the worst one, but I think the other ones are
Mecha Beatrice.
Don't. I want Mecha Beatrice so bad. You have no idea. That sounds fantastic. Ryukishi, if you want to do like an Umineko like new like spin-off thing, Mecha Beatrice is right there.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, she's the closed room robot. Good for her.
Do we want to do some listener questions?
Should we go to some listener questions?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because I've really got quite excited. A few, so we need to like
dive in. Actually, first, before we do listener questions, Have you guys got any questions that you feel you have not been answered?
The first question on the list is my own.
I think mine will overlap with some listener ones too, so yeah.
Should we just do some...
Go on, Rowan.
Well, this is the thing, like, all I had a bunch of things I wanted to, like, get from you, and then, like, clearly, one mind, my beloved listener, my dearest friend, has thought the exact same fucking thing, so...
Okay, all right.
Show. Yeah. Well, this is the thing, right? Because you've spent so long holding your tongue, I'm really excited to now, like, grill. Some of these
I will answer everything to the best of my ability, because at this point I don't care about spoilers. I will say I'm not super familiar with some of the side material, so if there's something I feel like is answered in that, then, like, sorry.
I don't think any
but
of
everything
this
else
is, like, plot-based, I'll be honest with you, because...
Oh, interesting.
The problem
I wasn't sure if you'd have any more, like, plot questions.
The problem is, when in episode 3 I really deeply cared about this, like, discrepancy where one person was somewhere and the other person wasn't, and, like, oh, how did this hidden room work? I now, like, I've forgotten about that. That was, like, 8 months ago.
That was ages ago, and the game kind of made it clear that it also didn't really care about that anymore, so so I kind of also stopped caring about it.
This is why I've threatened to reread Umen Echo so that I can go back through and be like, are you fucking joking constantly?
Oh, I will say, I think I might mention this before, but the reason the anime makes a mistake is it lets too many people see Shannon's body in the shed.
Interesting. Right. Which is really crucial.
Yeah. So
plot ruined immediately with the first set of murders.
That's the sort of problem of making
episode 1 or 2, right?
Yeah, like, I don't
that's
know
episode
what
2.
I do not know what went through their head that they thought they could make an anime based on a murder mystery in which they didn't already know the answers while they were making it. Like, that's an absolutely insane thing to decide. So
I think
no wonder
again,
it didn't work.
It makes more sense. I think the Umen Echo anime makes more sense when you watch the Higurashi anime, where the Higurashi anime was like, fuck this murder mystery, we want to make a horror anime, and we'll just kind of, like, shovel the mystery elements to the side to do some, like, really, like, gory horror
stuff.
You
can't do that with Umen Echo until the second half, where they do it themselves.
I guess. Well, they don't... Well, I wouldn't say the second half of Umen Echo is, like, gory horror.
No, I meant, like, shoving the mystery aside. That's the bit I meant.
Yeah,
incredible. So my first question is specifically to Courtney. I feel like you haven't had enough of a space to talk about, like, what, why do you love this thing?
Yeah, tell us, like, about tell us about your feelings.
Umen Echo so special to you,
yes,
that you're like, damn, I'm gonna dedicate a year plus of my life to every week reading a section, planning what it's going to be, fucking editing a podcast episode, and also,
and then
crucially,
having
dragging two of my friends along with me, like,
and having to listen to them while they talk shit about your
like, why do you love it that much? Like, tell us a bit more.
So friend Aggie, who has friend of the pod, Aggie,
yes,
guested
Aggie
on, I think, episode 5, we love Aggie, basically recommended Umen Echo to me because she was like, well, I would recommend Higurashi to you, but I know you like witches, so do you want to read a book about witches? And I was like, I do love witches. So I was kind of sold on this premise of being a book about, like, horrible women, and then it delivered very strongly on that premise. Even though I did find it a bit scary starting off with. There were several points where I was like, I should stop reading, this is scaring me too much, because I'm a baby. That also happened with Higurashi, now that I've read most of it. So I'm finished Higurashi. I'm really great, guys. I had to take a break because it got too intense. But yeah, so I was reading it, and I just found myself kind of, like, thinking about it constantly. It was always on my mind. I was always, like, thinking about the characters, thinking about what was happening. I was, like, whenever I wasn't reading Umen Echo, I was thinking, when can I read Umen Echo again, kind of thing. And one of the big things that I found helped with this was there were quite a few existing like podcasts and Let's Players where people would go through Umen Echo like blind, so I could kind of watch those and get other people's impressions in a way that like weren't influenced by like having already read it, so I didn't worry about spoilers, and I could kind of engage with it in a way that I missed out on by not being reading Umen Echo when I was when would it come out? I've been about 11 when it came out. So I was not reading this when I was 11.
Yeah.
What was I scared of when I was 11? I don't know, like jump scares in kids' movies. So I wasn't reading this. I think Ace Attorney was like pretty like intense for me when I was 11, and like that game is basically like Law and Order levels of like body stuff, like whatever. So it was quite nice to have that, and I was kind of like, well, I want to do like my own take, and I want to like do it with people who I think would have like really interesting opinions on it. I specifically brought in you guys because I knew you wouldn't be the kind of people to just sort of take it at like face value. I knew you'd want to analyze it, you'd want to analyze what it was saying, and that's why I really wanted to do this, was to explore this work I really enjoyed with like people who are going to give me a different take to mine.
We certainly did.
Yeah, exactly. Why I'm so glad you didn't come away from this being like, I 100% agree with you, Courtney, because then I'd be like, well, what was the point of this?
Yeah.
This wasn't an experiment.
I do wish we'd been able to find more of the magic in it that you did. But it does make for some interesting discussions, I will say, that we didn't.
We're probably a very unique Umen Echo podcast, let's put it that way.
I can't think of anything quite like us, because usually the podcasts doing this are people who really like visual novels.
Tumblr inbox message I got that time that we said that we had no love for the source material?
Hate mail to me specifically. Source. I love the source material.
Yeah.
But no, I think it's interesting to get other takes. I hope for anyone listening, I've been a good balancing factor as someone who really loves it, and I've made a good argument as to why I really love it. I hope I've put that across well. But also, yeah, I do think it's more interesting to have other takes on this.
Yeah.
And especially to have takes from people who are used to like reading like dense piece of literature, but maybe not dense piece of literature like this.
This has been a unique piece of media, I will say.
I will never read anything like this again, I don't think. Like, this is, I was coming into this having never read a single visual novel ever. I didn't even know what that fucking meant. And this is arguably one of the most visual novels of all time.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, it sure is.
So you're always going to get an interesting take.
There are very few visual novels that have as little interaction as that, like, fit the space of novel so much as this one.
Yeah.
And are also so long. And, like, also I will say, for Ryukichi's credit as well, like, it's ambitious. Like, I feel like he was trying to do an awful lot. I don't think he always achieved what he was trying to do, but like, he wasn't looking for a nice little pedestrian story with all of this. He wanted to make something like big and different and exciting, and yeah,
okay, that's a
punt. Yeah, he did.
And I think if you went into it sold on is going to be a book about awful women, like it
and
does
witches, it
100%
does
deliver on both of those things.
It does, yes.
Yeah, it really does.
Courtney was well sold.
I got sold on it more as like cool Agatha Christie mystery stuff, which is why I got hit so hard by episode 7.
I was sold on this by Hang Out with Courtney, so I'm actually coming out with this really quite well.
There you go.
Yeah, mission accomplished. You know me so well now.
Whether that's a good thing or not. I was saying to somebody the other day that I do think it should be mandatory to read Umen Echo to date you. Like, I'm fully pulled on that now. I'm really sorry because that, like, decreases your dating pool down to, like, 2 people. But I think it's mandatory.
If it helps, there is a lot of other media which is, like, very, like, illuminating on my personality that are shorter than Umineko that I would probably
I think it's
first.
Extremely funny as well at the different types of media that illuminate people about you, because they are not necessarily things that you would connect with each other. Like, like, give us some examples, Courtney. Like,
okay, I will say anyone I've ever had like an intimate relationship with, either already had or I've made have an knowledge of Revolutionary Girl Lieutenant.
Wow. That one is less surprising to me, considering I'm an echo. But it's things like Power Rangers that really that really, really make me go, what?
So
I'm appealing to Courtney based on my Muppets knowledge.
Oh yeah, love me some Muppets. No, I mean, I don't know if that's so much like illuminating. I guess that's more illuminating on my tastes rather than who I am as a person.
Okay, fair.
I guess unless you consider the fact that I'm a grown woman who's really into kids shows as illuminating on my personality. I love things that are just kind of like crazy and over the top, which I guess Umineko delivers on.
Yeah.
So, if there's any media that's just like full camp, throws like logic and subtlety out the window in like its acting and like presentation, then sure, I don't mind subtle themes, but I want like the characters and like the like metaphors to be like huge.
Yeah,
you know, like that scene in Utena where there are a bunch of desks and each one has like a milkshake on top of it, and then Anthy goes around and drinks all the milkshakes while her girlfriend is fighting someone else to a sword battle. Okay, good question. I like that.
So the first question we've got, I'm gonna kind of smush two together. Mike asked us, kind of towards me and Jess mainly, but like, what was the easiest episode to solve? What was the hardest? What was our favorite mystery? And also Millet Rug asked us if we have a favorite, least favorite, most batshit red blue truth moment. I feel like that's all kind of the same question. So.
That's really good. Yeah, I like that. Oh, I have so many, though.
In my head, so the things that most stand out to me in terms of, like, Red Blue Truths and the mysteries, I cannot stop thinking about the Red Truth web. Like, that's such an iconic moment.
Same. That's such a good moment.
And actually, I really love that episode as well from us, because we got Aggie to do Ava Beato's like voice lines.
Yes,
that section in the middle, and it goes so fucking hard. Aggie like absolutely put her foot in it, so I love that.
Yeah, it's so good. And one of my highlights of doing the pod, I went to Aggie and I was like, listen, I know you can do a really good witch laugh, I need you to do this.
This is your calling. The other thing I think about a lot is like, actually the one that really sticks out to me is, do you remember Eric her when she's like crawling around the walls like a spider?
yes
like in the moment, I know I loathed that move like so much. I was like, fuck this bitch, but that's exactly what like Ryukishi
that's what
wanted.
You're meant to feel.
Actually, that was a really like, that moment was sold really well, and I also think it's such an Umineko moment. Like, you kind of have to be that deep in Umineko to really get that moment, but it was so well sold at the time. So when I think about like Red Blue Truths and the mysteries and stuff, like those are the moments that really stand out to me as like bits I remember really well.
Nice.
What do you two think?
I think for me, like,
well,
yeah, I would say episode 3, the truth web and stuff, like episode 3 was, I wouldn't say it was the easiest, but it was the one that it was the only one that I felt like, before we knew the answers, I could put together a full solution for that didn't deny any of the red truths and kind of made sense.
Oh, you did, didn't you? Because of your, like, Kyrie being half dead.
Because Ava kind of obviously did a few of the murders, and then I came up with a solution for the red truth web. So I didn't come up with the answer, but I did come up with something that was quite cool, and I put a lot of thought into it, and so like
I really
enjoyed doing that.
That was great.
So like, I and I I did prefer my solution of that to the actual one.
I will say it's funny. I think I have mentioned this before. The Red Truth Web was how I got started on the Sayo,
yeah,
like, canon theory.
Which I completely missed.
Yeah, my interpretation of it was, like, maybe people can use different names. So, like, yeah, Shannon's dead, but, like, what if, like, she has, like, a different identity?
Yeah, which we'd almost kind of picked up on anyway, because we knew they were servant names, and we were kind of using that for episode 2, you know, when Canon disappeared, and it was like, Canon is dead, and we were like, but then a Canon appeared, and we were like, is this a situation where he's like, a part of him is dead, but like, the servant bit is dead and the other bit isn't? So we were like, we kind of got there with that. But then because I found the Kyrie thing,
yeah, just absolutely ate shit.
I didn't consider that option for the Red Truth.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's really cool.
I was so happy when we did that, because I was like, that means you guys are actually like focusing on what's happening.
And, yeah,
like,
I really loved that. But I wanted, what I will say is I wanted many more Red Truth bits. I wanted the mysteries to be more detailed so that we could have more Red Truth battles. I also really liked, I think, like, in terms of Red Truth, Blue Truth moments, I don't remember it that well, but I seem to remember being quite excited at the end of episode 4 when Battler and Beatrice have that Red Blue Truth bit where it comes out that Kinzo was dead the whole time.
Yes, yes, that's a really good moment.
I think that's like, it's like just before the tiny bombs thing or something as well, which is very
funny.
Yeah,
it's like a dragon fight with Kinzo.
But yeah, like, I really that bit was like, that bit threw me. I hadn't considered that, and that was really cool. Yeah, I loved that.
Yeah, that was a
Kinzo's
good point.
Drag Race, rest in pieces.
I know.
Fucking hell.
That was one of my favourite early theories.
But yeah, I did like...
When you were like, Kinzo's Drag Race, I was like, oh my god, you're so close to something there. And it's going to be funny.
You're like, it is a drag race, it's just not quite his.
It's not Kinzo's Drag Race. It's like Sayo creating, like, this ideal teenage boy and this ideal teenage girl to, like, do drag as.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, what I will say, because you know you mentioned about Shannon's personality earlier. Like,
yeah.
I do think, like, in the manga, I think it talks about how, like, Canon is created as, like, Sayo's idea of, like, what a boy should be. He's moody, he's quiet, he's kind of pessimistic, he does insults, he's quite logical. But, like, it doesn't talk about how I think Shannon is also pitched as, like, the perfect, like, girl. She's very passive. She's like, she tries to be like optimistic all of the time. Like, she's like the perfect
servant. I think we get moments
stuff.
Of that a bit more subtly, because we have the like mentor persona that we see in episode 7 of Shannon, who's like not really there, who's like her friend and is kind of this ideal female servant. And also, I think Shannon ends up getting tangled in this idea that Sayo wants to have like a family and be like a very traditional like mother figure. That is like denied to them.
But yeah, it's very well done, and also so sad that in all of these personalities, like, you don't really get to meet Sayo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's so many different fronts of various created personalities hiding the actual person, because there's clearly so much like self-loathing there.
I think we see glimpses of actual Sayo in some moments where Beatrice lets her guard down,
yeah,
but we don't get many of those. So I will say I think like Sayo, Beatrice, like that whole character is one of my favorite fictional characters maybe ever, just in the complexities and how they're written.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
And I think it all does come together.
I think so as well. And it works well as a kind of they work well simultaneously for, you know, the key to the mystery, whilst also being an interesting and complex character.
Yeah, definitely. I just think it's funny because I remember going into Mneppo, like, really not liking Shannon as, like, a character and just being like, oh, it's so frustrating. Yeah. She's just, like, the stock, like, shy anime girl, And then, like, kind of seeing Rika, she actually do something with that and finding out why someone would behave like
being
that.
Being like, I actually, like, she's created to be that.
Yeah.
There's a reason that she's that like really, that. And, yeah.
I really enjoyed that as a concept. I like it when, again, playing with kind of, well, yeah, someone seems like a stock archetype, but, like, why would someone be like that?
Yeah, you know? Rather than just accepting it.
Yeah.
So the next question we've got, it comes from Mike again, friend of the show. How
friend
many
show,
times,
Mike, been on two episodes?
Courtney, did you hold your tongue not giving away the solution? I know you've talked a lot about, like, the epitaph. And, like, struggling so hard not to tell us about the epitaph, but are there any other, like, standout moments where you were, like, so close?
It's funny that this comes after, like, the Sayo stuff, because there was a lot of, like, gender stuff I really wanted to.
Yeah.
So you guys had a lot of gender speculation. I was like, I really want to clarify some of this, but I don't feel like I should. I feel like I should wish we get to it in the story.
Yeah, like, we talked about the boob lore earlier on.
And stuff like where you were like, I'm not sure if this is like good gender exploration, which I personally think it is. But I was like, I don't want you to like go into the later parts of the book with this expectation, like from me having explained it already.
And, and that we have to like it. I imagine based on your own different gender experiences, I'm sure there are people out there who think this is terrible gender stuff because it really clashes with their own feelings and stuff. I think it's interesting. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't really interact with my own feelings about my own gender in any way. So I'm like, I think it's quite cool and interesting.
Again, it's something that quite resonated with me. Again, though, if you've watched Revolutionary Girl Lieutenant, you'll probably understand why I feel like this. I didn't mean to turn this episode into a please watch Revolutionary Girl Lieutenant, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I don't know if Rikishi's seen it. We'll, probably, because it's quite a popular
we'll
anime.
We'll include the content warning list in the
I was
going to
say,
if you have access to it before you go in.
I was going to say, if you do watch that show, please look at the trigger warnings first. There are a lot of them.
Much like Umineko.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we got that trigger warning list early on.
Yes.
Trying to think. There are a couple of other moments I kind of wanted to speak up on. I know some of the Erica stuff I wanted to like speak more about her character and her role especially when Rowan was like, I don't like this character. Like,
yeah.
Conceptually, I don't like this character. And I agree with some of your points that you made, but overall, I love her as a sort of I love characters who are like, I'm going to test out the themes of my work by having a character who is just the opposite of those themes.
Yeah.
And have my heroes clash with her. And I think she does such a good job of that, of being truth obsessed to the point where she's just like completely insane.
Yeah.
I don't know whether or not I guarantee that if I listen back to some of our old episodes, I do not stand by everything I said previously. I know I've in the moment retracted things and they've definitely said stuff for the bit. I think Erica is one of the biggest characters that I'm like now retrospectively like, now she kind of slapped though. Rikishi did kind of go off there.
I think the narrative needed someone on the other end. And she was very hateable.
She's really so well written at being hateable.
Yeah, I do
again,
feel like
so good at writing horrible.
I wasn't sure I really enjoyed her appearance in the trick ending alongside Anja, because again, I didn't feel like Anja choosing trick at the end there aligned her with Erica as much as the narrative suggested.
Yeah, the trick ending is controversial, and maybe there's a world where Umineko has one ending, because it's clearly the correct ending,
yeah,
and then there's a trick ending.
Yeah. I do think Erica, like, being there, especially when Battler, when he's like, I'm looking for truth, and she's like, so am I, and I'm ready to kill people and just tear everything apart for it. And him being like, what?
Yeah. So Squid's Corner asks, you're stuck in one Umineko outfit for the rest of your life. What do you pick? This is really hard for me because most of the outfits have sleeves. And if you know anything about me, I fucking love to get my guns out.
You love the Higurashi outfits. Many guys have that.
Because I thought this would be easy for you and you'd be like, Jewel Genderman, there we go.
He's wearing a jacket.
Would it be Jewel Genderman, but I've ripped the sleeves off?
Absolutely. Give me a pair of scissors and we're gone.
Yeah.
Jewel
Genderman would be a nice one for me as well. The problem is that like a lot of the coolest outfits are very femme.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Honestly, okay. Hot take. Natsuhi's outfit.
Yeah, that tracks for you. You would fucking.
I love that outfit. It's really good.
Yeah, I'm like, I think I would.
I love a little cravat thing.
I would potentially rock Jewel Genderman's outfit. I'm also going to put out a potential one for Maria's cozy casual outfit that we see in the flashbacks.
Yeah.
Where she's wearing a little, like, cute fuzzy hoodie with, like, a bear on it. I'm like, maybe that.
That is your vibes, actually. Yeah. I don't know what the half of that looks like, but if it's, like, you know.
Yeah, I don't either because I haven't seen it, but, like, it seems like it would be vibes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Agreed. Okay, Adam of the guest episodes asked really intriguingly, in terms of not just reading the book but also recording the podcast, how much does the time investment of Hidden Tea Party compare to other like big projects you've done in your life? Ooh. How like memorable, emotionally fulfilling, mentally scarring was this process?
Mentally scarring.
This isn't like anything I've ever done before.
No.
It's simultaneously like quite a big time investment. I mean for me, as I've done none of the editing, like little time investment in comparison to you two, probably, unless I'm trying to solve the epitaph.
Yeah, I was gonna say the epitaph.
But like the extra time I'm spending on things like that is because I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
And like because it's fun rather than because I feel like I have to. Because if I felt like I had to solve the epitaph, I wouldn't fucking do it.
Yeah.
I guess with me, this has been really great because this is... I'm bad at finishing projects, so I'm amazed we managed to finish this.
I'm bad at starting them even. So like, yeah, this is great.
I love starting things. Great at starting things, but like, I need help finishing things, and I think I really picked you guys well because you guys have really, like, again, you haven't had to do as much as me, but you've put in, like, enough where I felt like you're, like, also invested.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I felt like, well, I need to keep going because, like, Rowan Jess are, like, also in it, you know? It's not like other projects with other people I've had where I felt a bit like, oh, well, I care about this. I'm not really sure everyone else does to the same level. Mm. But like with you guys, it's been, like I said, I've had to do a lot of work, but I haven't minded doing it because like it's been worth it. And I did eventually learn how to play video games and edit, so I feel like that helped.
Yeah, I feel like we've come to a lot of firsts with this, like my first Twitch stream, you know, baby's first Twitch stream on Courtney's account, and stuff. Like there were some really good bits like us. Also, like I didn't know Rowan before we did this.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, this is new friend territory. New bond created through Umineko. But I'm so very pleased that
we did. I, like, barely knew Rowan going into this. We there's something about you, Rowan, where, like, we just, like meshed really well very quickly. So I didn't, like, hadn't known you for very long, but I was, like, I want this person on my podcast.
You were in my house for 11 days straight.
That did help.
The mind meld.
We were just like, not very long into hanging out, we were like, do you want to just never leave for a bit? And that's how I've watched any RuPaul's Drag Race.
Ah, there you go.
You're welcome. But just like we've known each other like forever, I think since like 2016, since I played D&D
something
together,
like that, yeah.
Life-changing.
Incredible.
I knew I wanted to.
But yes, and I do feel like I understand you more now, Courtney, as a person. I've been in your mind, your Umineko mind.
You've been in my mind. Well, you've seen the kind of D&D characters I've created, that's, so you start out with a bit of insight.
So Adam also asked, what were people's favourite bits of the podcast?
Bits of the pod? Okay, I loved a lot of the voice acting.
Like, bits as in, like, silly jokes, or like...
Oh, or silly jokes, or just moments.
Yeah, well, this was, like, both? Bits as in, like, silly moments, but, like, also now you're saying it, like, yes, other things as well.
I enjoyed Epitaph Corner.
Yes. Epitaph Corner was really funny. It's a big fan of Kinzo's Drag Race. Yes. I will always think... Whenever I reread this, I will be thinking about Kinzo's Drag Race.
Kinzo's Drag Race.
Human Soup Chair also stays with me. Beatrice, the soup mancer, magic soup slinging.
That was
witch.
An early one. And yeah, and it's stuck with me.
Yeah.
Rowan is incompetent.
Very good. Yeah. It's really funny. So I don't know how much we do this like on air, but referring to Umineko as hit visual novel, Umineko. One, yeah. I have never been able to refer to Umineko really as like just by itself. You always have to say hit visual novel. And it's also gotten to the point where my friend Marshall, who is making me read another visual novel right now, To the Moon, just like sent me a message yesterday being like, this is just like hit visual novel To the Moon, and I was like,
well, there you go,
legendary momentous.
Yeah, everything
I also enjoyed the bit of for our audio listeners that I didn't even realize was a proper bit for like
I forgot
episodes
about
that. On because I was like, are we recording like video as well? I did not know that.
I forgot that.
Oh, also, you guys have given me so much appreciation for the character of Goda at a level that I never have before. I know I was previously aware of the episode 2 like solution that was like memeing a lot, but then you guys took it to another level. I love that so much. Just beautiful.
He's like, I don't understand how this has happened, because he's just like, there's basically nothing going for him and he doesn't really say very much, and I don't know how we've latched onto him so much.
So here's a fun fact. Initially, one of the plot points in episode 5 was meant to be Natsuhi having an affair with Goda.
That would have been
some of the female staff members said that they didn't like the direction of that.
Oh, so yeah, I remember you mentioning this. Yeah, which was...
Oh, have I mentioned it before? Yeah.
Yeah, which I thought was a wild thing for all of the things that happen in the visual novel. That one was a wild one to be like, actually, no, I don't like the direction that's going in, given everything else that happens.
Get accused of fucking Kinzo instead.
I will say there's some side Goda material about his old life at a hotel, where I think the implication is meant to be he got fired for sexual assault, but like it was actually the upper management framing him because he was trying to like unionize. So
that's wild.
It's like a whole thing. Yeah. Very funny. Not sure if I want that in the actual VN, but very funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you for the Goda.
Speaking of Goda, Fred Scare asks, fuck, marry, kill.
Boy.
Goda, brackets, Mole Hands, Ronave, and Willard.
Okay, you go first, Rowan.
Ooh. Oh, well, God, I haven't thought about this.
You're asking too many of the questions. You need to answer some of them too, so I'm forcing you.
This is quite an upsetting thing to me because my real life nesting partner is named Will and voiced Willard on the podcast. So if I don't say marry Willard...
What was the middle one? Ronave.
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 My love, my life. And then obviously Goda, the sexual juggernaut that is Goda.
What a phrase!
With the mole hands. I think I am going to have to marry Ronave because while on the surface I feel like that's a bit too much like, oh, I'm like marrying into somebody who holds a lot of the same values as me, I do think we could do a really good like Team Rocket situation where we like, I don't know, like, we're traveling around, we're, like, henchmen for hire, we're also, like, in love. It's a, like, episodic anime thing. I don't know. Which leaves me to fuck Will and kill Goda.
Killing Mole Hands Goda. That's so sad.
I mean, he is a mass murderer, so I suppose. Forgive him.
Only by accident?
Well, by accident. By accident.
Courtney, yeah, I can't risk whoopsies for the rest of my life.
Courtney, what are your choices?
Okay, again, I'm going to go with Mari Ranove, fuck Will, kill Goda. I feel like that's the meta here.
Okay, well, I'm going
to. As much as I love Goda, I think it would be very funny for him to just die. That would be very funny. Because you'd do it in the funniest way possible.
Okay, so my super serious take on this is that I want to marry Ranove. We're going to have a loveless marriage in which we're both very polite to each other and we have cups of tea and then just do our own thing. You know, it's going to be a lovely house. We're going to have our lovely cups of tea and little chat, small talk chats, and then we just do our own thing.
Queer platonic relationship with Ranove.
Yeah, I'm going to fuck Goda because I really am curious about what the mole hands do.
That's a good point, actually. I didn't think about that.
And Will is sadly the only one left, so bye.
You know what they say about mole hands? Weird gloves.
Weird as gloves. Possibly also weird genitals.
I mean, I guess... I guess they do say that, maybe.
Fred also asked, fuck, marry, kill Ava, Hachijo, and Kirie.
Ooh, okay, this is more...
I've included because it's all... I feel like Hachijo? Fucking hell. Strike of the Rowan Carpronites things name. Again.
You've gotten better at pronouncing things. And I have. Honestly, I see that as a win on my part.
Yes.
So you'll get all the Ace Attorney puns when we do that.
Maybe. I can't... I was in the car today, and I have been listening to the same album on repeat most of the week, and I was trying to sing along, and I could not sing along. Like, I know in my head what the word is, and then it comes out of my mouth, and it never comes out of my mouth. Anyway, I've included this because Hachijo, that bitch,
yeah,
is such a, like, curveball, I think. You've got to...
It's a real interesting one, because my gut... has surprised me on this.
Oh, go, 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 go.
Because my gut says, marry Kirie, fuck Ava, kill Hachijo.
That was my answer
Which
as
is
well.
Surprising to me, because Hachijo, in this trio, has done by far the least wrong.
Yeah.
But I hate her attitude.
Yeah, Hachijo
is
the most irritating.
I guess because Hachijo exists on a plane of existence beyond mortal comprehension, it's hard to really put her sins in the same context as Ava. And
it's also difficult.
Featherine does. Hachijo, I think, is different.
Yeah.
To me.
It's...
Oh, Hachijo is in like... Oh, sorry, yeah, I'm thinking Featherine. I guess because they're so tied in my head.
For me, yeah, I don't know. Like, I've talked to Courtney about this separately as well. Like, there's a strong feeling without me. Like, you know, Kirie and Ava, you know. Horrible people, whatever. Fun fictional characters. Hachijo, for me, feels like an author self-insert of Ryukishi.
Yeah.
Because of how tied she is with, obviously, writing the story. Like, she's an author. She has, in canon, written some of the episodes that Ryukishi has written. They're very, you know, closely tied. And the fact that Hachijo explicitly hates her readers.
Yeah.
And thinks they're like little ants and that they're massively below her and that we're all idiots and that she just enjoys kind of tricking them and playing with them. Like, oh, it rubs me up the wrong way. And like, I'm sure that's not what Ryukishi intended us to feel like his views on us were. But especially with the kind of whole trickery with the, I'm not really going to give you a solution, but I kind of am, but I'm not really. And like all of that kind of stuff. Like, makes me really not like that character and its potential, yeah. Like what its implications, let's say, on a on a meta level. So that's why Hachijo is dying.
would not fuck or marry Ryukishi. Would it suck?
I will say, as a counter argument, I think I also said this on the pod, I personally see Feathering and Hachijo as sort of a manifestation of maybe Ryukishi's like worst thoughts and like impulses as an author. Because in a way, I do think Umineko is a bit of a reaction to the success of Higurashi and the reaction from the audience in terms of the mystery in Higurashi. So I think that's kind of tying to that theme, them like basically being the worst kind of author who has no respect for their audience, as a way of Ryukishi kind of processing his feelings on having audience members who he felt were like not properly meeting him where he was with his work.
Which is really interesting, because once again, Umineko would have been better if Ryukishi had gone to therapy instead.
Yeah. Great point, Rowan.
Like, it would have been a better book if
I can't argue with
like,
that,
fucking...
I will say. Okay, but who are you killing and marrying and fucking, though?
I completely agree with you. Hachijo is really irritating, and then of the remaining two, Kirie is the best wife material.
Yeah.
I think my marriage to either Ava or Kirie would be much like my friendship with Courtney, which is to say, like, I would be following them around being like, God, what a woman, while they, like, commit war crimes or whatever.
And having just the most insane sex.
As Courtney and I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, constantly. Constantly. Fucking right now.
It's not podcasting a type of... Moving forward. I'm glad I was going to offer to edit this episode.
You can't get rid of this.
I do think I like Ava's so far gone for me now. Courtney, do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. It's my answer as well. Okay. Ava, I would say I love, I'm obsessed with, I'm like just such a good character to watch and like engage with, but I'm not sure I really want to marry her. At least with Kirie, I know that like if someone like ever slighted me, I would never see them again.
Yeah, like you'd be absolutely fine so long as you didn't betray her. Or like and also you'd be like, right, I'm sending you to therapy, babe. We're gonna work on some issues here.
Basically, yeah. So. Okay. Well, the final question that I've got here is from Nova, who said, "Which of Courtney's struggles is going to be happening next?" Which, upon further exploration, was like basically, "What are we doing next on the pod?" We've hinted
which
at
of Courtney's struggles. So, yeah, we've talked about this before. I will say something that I have not ruled out in the future, and I would really like to do on this, for real Courtney struggle hours, is doing Danganronpa.
That would be true Courtney struggle.
That is a visual novel franchise I have so many very complicated feelings towards for a multitude of reasons that I feel like it could be very funny to do it on the pod, because I'd simultaneously be like, oh, I kind of like this, but also this is the worst thing ever written. Mm.
Yeah. I think it would be a very interesting and nuanced thing in some areas. In some areas, not nuanced at all, but yes.
Also, it would be nice to read something where I don't like the author.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
I don't like a lot of his writing style, so rather than like where I'm like really sympathetic to Ryukishi, I'm gonna like, as soon as Kodaka did anything I didn't like, I'd be like, fuck this guy.
That's really funny.
Awful man. Who keeps saying him write books? So, but no, the next Courtney struggle is going to be Ace Attorney, which I, a franchise I have been into since I was age 12.
Beautiful.
I was given one of the games as a present for finishing year 7 of the first year of secondary school, and have been obsessed with ever since.
Yeah.
I've played them all so many times. I like know exactly what happens in like basically every game. So yeah, it will be a struggle in the sense I'm gonna have to be like, damn, I have to actually like think about this now. yeah. rather than like being 12 and just being like, ooh, cool murder mystery. Yeah. I'm going to be like, what does it say about the characters?
I will also say I've not played all of the Ace Attorney games. I have played the ones we're going to do, at least to start with. I do like them. So there's a start. But because of my terrible memory, I don't remember much about them. So it will almost be like I'm doing them for the first time. I've certainly not had to analyze them before either, which is different.
Yeah. I will say that we are going to do the first game and then kind of see where we go from there.
Yeah.
I don't know. It depends how I feel once we've wrapped the
It'll
first
depend
game.
It'll depend how it's all working like, and we wanna do that more? Kind of thing.
Yeah. Do you want to do more? Should we pivot to something else? But for now, it's only first game. I'm not even sure about the bloody extra case that exists for some reason.
But yeah, we are going to do Hatterful Boyfriend first as a little intermission, but that is a much shorter game. So that won't take us very long, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm expecting that to take somewhere between a month and 2 months for us to get
probably.
Through.
So a little light, yeah. I say light, not really, but like, you know, a different little intermission there.
Little intermission, yeah.
Worth
but
noting,
yeah,
the
Courtney struggle on that will be no that I have not, words. Like, read it before, so I'm actually going to have to, like, come up with thoughts
on
the spot. On
the go.
Rather than being like, oh, I've kind of processed this before.
Yeah, we'll see how you enjoy that experience, and if you hate it, we can not do this again, so.
I think I'll like it.
I hope you
I think
will.
It'll just be different for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Going into all of this blind, the only thing I know really, I mean, I know Hatterful Boyfriend is about pigeons, ? That's as much as I've got.
Good. We don't want you to have any other context before you start.
I also know Ace Attorney is a series where there's like more men that you can make a kiss with your mind. There's like Ace Attorney fandom is definitely like these men are gay for each other a bit more than Umineko is, which for my sins does often endear me to a piece of fiction slightly more.
Yes. I will say as well.
I will say
sorry, you go first.
As somebody that enjoys kissing men.
Fair enough. No, I will say that I think of all the visual novels I've read, Umineko is probably the most female led one.
Yeah.
So
and that fucking slaps.
This level.
Love women, love when women are being girl bosses, brackets, awful. It just, there's not like really any like fun shipping stuff you can do with it, I don't think.
Yeah, Umineko is not a great shipping book because everyone's related to each other. Yeah. Not that that stops people, no. But it should.
Speaking of shipping, if people would like, before we leave Umineko behind, another fanfic episode. I can arrange that.
We did get a question. I've edited down our listener questions a little bit. We did get a question being like, can we have more fanfic?
I may be able to.
Rowan, you do owe us a fanfic.
You owe us one. We could maybe do a fanfic episode before
fanfic,
you know, in the in the intermission. I'd be up for that.
Yeah, I always have time for a fanfic episode if both of you want to do fics.
Okay. I can get behind this.
Mm-hmm. We maybe need to make sure we're not doing the same thing, but... Because the...
Okay.
Again, there aren't that many pairings.
Very true.
Yeah, not a great shipping series, but maybe that's...
Maybe that is.
One
very quick thing I wanted to bring up. You mentioned earlier, Courtney, was there anything that plot-wise that we wanted to know about? And like, I think I brought up pretty much everything at the time that I'd thought of. I can't remember if I've talked about this on pod. Have we talked about the mystery of Maria's Rose on the podcast? Because I don't think we have.
Have we not? Maybe we haven't. What if we haven't?
Does this ring a bell for you, Rowan?
When Maria loses her rose.
Yeah. What happened to it?
Yeah.
That's like really early on, isn't it?
Yeah. In pretty much all the episodes.
It is like you get an explanation for it.
There is an answer to it, and I found this out through Tumblr.
I knew this answer.
And I was like, oh my god.
Tell me.
So, during the first lunchtime, they go into detail describing all the food Goda has made. And the dessert is like a cake that's been decorated with rose petals.
No. Goda fucking garnishes their dessert with it.
Mr. Whoopsie strikes a fucking game.
He's back.
Yeah, he sees this dying rose and is like, you know what, that thing's got not got much
life
left
in it. That's fair enough. And because of that, in episode 3, Maria dies.
Yeah. Very, like, Always Sunny music playing. Oh, no, Kirby and Fusey.
Goda, come on, man. I was like, we cannot finish Umineko without me talking about this if we haven't talked about it on the pod already, because that blew my mind.
I didn't know if we had, but we clearly have.
I think I talked about it with you off pod, Corny. Yeah.
That must have been it, yeah, because I remember bringing it up. Oof. It's so funny. And the fact that you can kind of put it together from just episode 1 is pretty great.
Yeah, so he was just like, yeah, I'll just... And Maria didn't recognize her rose when she ate it.
There it was in pieces.
Was it true love?
This is the actual The Locked Tomb reference. People think it's the tiny bombs bit, but it's actually this.
Cryptic.
I need to read The Locked Tomb for context. So, is that it for questions?
Yeah, I think so. I haven't used all the questions we got sent, but sometimes they were like hard to answer or stuff we covered previously, and I don't want to be like repeating ourselves hundreds of times. But I think I've got everything I wanted, at least.
I have one question I really wanted to know, because as you guys know, my favorite episode is episode 5. I just want to know what your favorite episode was of the ones we've done. I know it's been a while, but...
I think for the reasons I stated earlier, it would be 3.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Episode
3
similarly.
Is a very popular episode.
Mm-hmm. That makes
episode
sense.
Episode 3 is the one that starts with the Vigilia Beato witch battle, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I may have to pick that one as well. It's certainly like between that and
it's where you start getting a handle on what the relationship between the magic and reality is. There's also some interesting some of the starting stuff with Ava's a little bit easier, and then there's the truth web at the end, which is really cool. So, yeah.
It's the only episode where I felt like I know what the fuck was going on.
Yeah, and I enjoyed knowing a bit about what was going on, and yeah, feeling I had a bit more of a handle on it. I could work with some of it and create some theories in a way that I didn't really feel like I could for like episode 4, for example.
yeah
there's some very
meanwhile,
significant
I really
stuff
like
that makes episode 4 not my favorite, although it could easily get there.
I think for me my favorite is episode 5, because I love Erica, known Erica mm-hmm. lover. I love the kind of like battles that happen in it, with like the sort of like witch side being more on like the back foot than in the previous four
episodes.
That
is fun, yeah.
And I do find Natsuhi really enjoyable as like someone like scrambling around trying to like protect themselves from
I did like the court scene, I will say, until the ending of the court scene, which I didn't feel like was expanded enough. Which, you know, I ranted about at the time, but like the first bit of the court scene I did think was really cool.
I had so much fun doing our court scene episode.
Yeah, that was really fun. Was so God, that was
that's
ages ago.
That's probably one of our best episodes, I think, personally. Yeah. And that's good news. We're playing a courtroom game, so we're going to have a lot more
of
that.
Yeah. Looking forward to that energy going forward.
I'm not, yeah, one of the things that I am kind of sad about if we do Hatterful Boyfriend is because it's so short and because... I'm just like, I don't feel like I have the time or space to do any cool bits for it. We're just probably gonna read it and talk about it. If I think of anything cool, I'll put it in, but like...
Yeah, let me know, I'll...
The longer form stuff lends itself...
pool of voice actors.
The longer form stuff lends itself better to like voice acting sections, cool episode theming, that kind of thing, in a way that I'm not sure we're gonna be able to create for the smaller ones. We'll see. We'll manage to make it fun.
Yeah, well, we're just naturally entertaining.
We are.
So before we wrap up this wrap-up, I have one more thing.
Okay.
You have finished hit visual novel Umineko. Yeah. One of the longest pieces of media in existence.
Where is my medal?
And to acknowledge such efforts, I feel it would be only fitting to present you with the title of witch, if you so choose to accept.
Yay! I think are I you got bo-
do you want to be a witch of something?
Yeah. Are you joining me, Rowan? Do you want to be a witch?
Like, so bad.
What will we be witches of?
Yes, I didn't know whether you wanted me to come up with a title or whether you had any ideas of your own. I'm happy to do either.
Do you have a title in mind, Courtney?
Rowan, it's going to be so hard not to give you Witch of Incompetence. I'm so sorry.
But that sounds like I'm shitting myself.
Not incontinence!
Oh, fuck. I don't know that I've done anything more iconic, though. That's my problem.
Justice for Witch of Epitaph.
I love it.
Witch of Epitaph Failure.
Witch of Whoopsies. Witch,
okay.
Witch of Whoopsies!
Okay, so, like, at first I
that
was...
again sounds like you shit yourself.
Yeah, no,
but,
that
you know.
Really does. Witch of Incompetence and Witch of Whoopsies. There we go. I did think the first thing that came to mind was Witch of, scare quotes, nuance.
Yes.
Incredible.
But I'm also being like, you know what would be cool? Would be Witch of Fanfics.
Witch of Fanfic.
Witch of Fanfic. Well.
I think that's...
And obviously Rowan can then be Witch of Twitter account. RIP Twitter.
Witch of dead Twitter account.
Witch of hitting people with a rock.
Oh, and now we're banned on Spotify too. Goodbye, everyone!
Sadly, that night... because of their terrible accusations against him, Goda mauled Jess to death with his maul hands. And only Rowan was left alive. Courtney, the Golden Witch of video games, gave an explanation for the witch ending of Umineko, which was so great that Rowan was completely persuaded. And together they left to the Golden Land, never to return.
Go to the gold land off the back of my death. How dare you?
Can you please keep that soundbite in if you do this?
Right, hold on. And the Golden Witch Courtney began to tell of everything. She started providing answers to all of Rowan and Jess's questions. Everyone made logical sense. Everyone satisfied them. And Rowan and Jess were forced to admit Umineko truly was a good video game. The rest is a story that need not be told. After toppling the king and resigning, all that remains is to reflect upon one's moves and set the pieces up once more.
Thank you for joining us. All our social media is in the description. And once and for the last time, I would like to say... see you again when something else cries.
I'm crying right now.
Ooh.